Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannon with you until 3 o'clock today. And looking at the news around today, we hear that there are calls that Kerry Airport be renamed after the Liberator, Daniel O'Connell. It's coming up to the 250th anniversary of the birth of O'Connell in Carahan outside Carrisaveen in 1775, regarded as one of the great Europeans of all time. Always associated, of course, with Catholic emancipation, also associated with the abolition of slavery. So is it time that we were flying into the Daniel O'Connell Airport in Kerry? John Crotty, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You think it is time?
100%. You know, I think Daniel O'Connell is the most substantial Irishman of all time, and he's been overlooked for far too long.
And actually, it was only when I was looking at this today, I was thinking, it's amazing that there isn't more statues, buildings, you know, things named after Daniel O'Connell, because he is such a huge figure in our history.
He is, massively. And, you know, there's a very obvious reason for that, Katie. It's simply because he wasn't a Republican. And Ireland, of course, went down that Republican route in a very big way, certainly from the late 19th century. But once the Easter Rising happened, you had this obsession almost with the Republicans, with the men of Easter week. And of course, they deserve their place, but it shouldn't have been a case of dismissing Daniel's input almost because of his moral force needs.
OK, take me back. Tell us a bit more about him then, because I know you're a bit of an expert. Go back. So born, as we say, 1775. When did he sort of come to public prominence?
You know, he was a solicitor by trade and a famous one. You know, he was exceptionally good in his trials. He was often quoted in the newspapers. He had a way with words his whole life. And that was being picked up from a very early age as soon as he entered the profession. But, of course, when he turned his attention to national affairs, and first it was Catholic emancipation that he really became the celebrity figure, when he formed the Catholic Association, you know, the uptake on this was just enormous. You had hundreds of thousands, even millions of people suddenly engaged in political activity. This was just unheard of at the time. You know, if you wanted to do something back then, you had a revolution, not this kind of public upswell of people, I guess, agitating politically. It was practically unheard of, and that really is where his legacy comes from.
Yeah, because of course, as you say, this was a time before, you know, when communication wasn't what it is now. There was no mobile phones or no social media groups to you know, gather people and get people you know, involved in campaigns. But he used to have these giant rallies.
Yes, these monster meetings are the stuff of legend. You know, they're upwards of between 500,000 and quite possibly even at the largest, 1 million people. You know, and you have
Can we believe that though? Because I know that's the reports and that's what we. But do these things grow? Literally grow in size in terms of the telling.
Undoubtedly, yes, undoubtedly there's exaggeration there. But even allowing for fairly gross exaggeration, you know, they represent an enormous achievement. You know, most of these people are living subsistence, existence, living day to day, hand to hand. So to motivate them to that extent, that they're willing to travel for days, as you said, no cars, no planes. Many of these people are hiking for nights and nights on end to get to these events.
He was, I suppose, he was a kind of a he was a celebrity politician in his time, right? He was, I tell you, it always strikes me as well. It was something that I remember being told as a school child about him, and maybe it might be another reason why he kind of fell out of favour or wasn't in vogue with in the era of Dev and that more kind of ascetic attitude towards morality, that it was always said that you couldn't throw a stone without hitting one of Daniel O'Connell's children.
Yes, this is true. Like so many great figures in history, there are many great traits, but there are the inevitable flaws as well. And certainly that's there. It exists. He was certainly, you know, bombastic. He could be aloof. He could be needlessly insulting with some of the people he dealt with. But I think on the whole, certainly from the research I've done, you have an individual that we can laud while recognising perhaps those inevitable flaws.
He inspired, you know, movements and he was inspired himself by the French Revolution. Is that?
Yes, certainly, in part. I mean, he took no part in the first French Revolution. He would have been a young man in his early 20s. Going right back now to 1798. Mm-hmm. He was not involved in any of these violent conflicts when they arose. But certainly he would have been a product of that generation. You know, The Rights of Man would have been published in the late 1700s. And it's influencing people on these ideas of liberty, equality. You know, he was a passionate spokesperson for it, but ahead of his time with the moral force means, with the idea of agitating for this peacefully.
And people speak of him in the same breath as like the real greats of that, of world history, like Gandhi and Martin Luther King.
Yeah, and no question he had an influence on these people. You know, he very much laid a template and the groundwork for these kind of individuals to say that with a large body of people, you can achieve significant overtures and overturns. You know, it's such a tragedy in the end that he couldn't deliver repeal of the Union and get the Parliament back in Dublin, because I think he'd be much more established as he deserves to be today.
And is it true as well that he played a role in the tricolour? Because I know there was a lot of debate around the flag that would represent the Irish.
Indeed,
Ireland.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I mean, that credit wrongly goes to Thomas Francis Maher.
Yeah.
It was very much Daniel O'Connell who was voicing this. I mean, as early in his career as 1810, he was calling for the people of Ireland to work together, the Catholics and Protestants to unite. And after Catholic Emancipation, when he moved on to repeal of the Union, it was his principal way of trying to get the Irish people to deliver their own independence. And he called for green and orange to unite, and it actually happened in the early 1830s that we saw the first tricolours. So very much as a result of Daniel O'Connell's involvement. So incredible to think we look up and see the Irish flag and we don't think of Daniel O'Connell, the man who truly inspired us.
Yeah, you don't. I was surprised to see that being referred to. I'm just put it out there. Does everyone else agree with you here? Because it wouldn't be the first choice maybe for people thinking they should put a name or honour somebody with putting their name over Kerry Airport. I know it before. I think, it came up this week because it was, I think, Fine Gael councillor John O'Donoghue. He brought forward a motion on it, and I think another Fine Gael councillor, Angie Bailey, is seconding it. But I know that there have been motions before suggesting maybe Tom Crean, the explorer, which seemed quite appropriate, given we're talking about a place of travel. So I put that out there. Does everyone agree with John that it's time that Daniel O'Connell got the significance that he deserves? Where he's buried in Glasnevin, John, is he?
He is, and I think if you've ever been there, you know, there's a round tower over his tomb. There's an enormous tomb there, and I think it shows the level of infamy he achieved in his own lifetime, that you have those kind of, honours. We just haven't continued those honours in later generations.
What about his long-suffering wife, Mary, John?
Of course, and look, you can go back to so many figures in history. John F. Kennedy, do we dismiss the, I suppose, achievements of an individual for the improprieties that might have occurred along the way? That debate will go on as long as humans are around, I think. And where are the lines that are crossed where we say that a person is no longer laudable? Certainly for me, from what I've read with Daniel O'Connell, you know, the achievements outweigh the flaws. You know, we have many Irish people who changed Ireland. We've only one Irishman that changed the world, and that is Daniel O'Connell. So I think it's so fitting that he would get this kind of tribute.
Right, only one Irishman that changed the world. The one thing I will say, though, of course, that nobody even calls Kerry Airport in my book. They generally say, are you flying into Farn 4? I don't know if anyone calls Liverpool Airport, John Lennon Airport, or where else has got named in recent years? And I wonder...
Belfast is George Best, of course.
When was the last time? When was the last time you heard anyone saying, I'm going to get the 4:45 into George Best?
No, and you know, for me, that just almost reinforces there shouldn't be so much concern about these kind of actions, because the reality is people will still refer to what they know it as to the past.
Yeah, it is significant though, because we've seen in recent years there was a move, you know, for the slave people associated with slavery, historic figures associated with slavery being removed from the, you know, over the doors of buildings, and statues being torn down and all that. So you do need to pick your historical figure very carefully if you're going to make a step like naming an airport after them.
Absolutely. We have to think of the future, and every generation makes its own rules. So it is great to have a mind to the future.
John, thanks very much for that. Edward, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm very well. Do you have another modest proposal for us?
Yes, I would like it to be named after the man that should be a saint, Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty, a renowned Kerry man, the Scarlet Pimpernel, and the film Gregory Peck would be associated with him. And he has been a renowned character. No disrespect to any of the other Kerry people, but this Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty is on the world stage, and it's about time that something was named after him, and that he should also be named a saint. And I think that's all I have to say about the man. Oh, the books, read it, and the story is there.
What era is he from? He's from the 1920s, is it?
No. Well, I'm not sure what year he was born in, but he would have been born. He would have been in the forefront of the Second World War, where he's Monsignor in the Vatican. And he crossed the white line, evaded the Germans and other matters like that. And he was never the same after the 33 people were massacred in the prison cell by the Germans. And he organized a network of renowned people in Ireland, and he never wins from anything. He was a great golfer. He stood up as a good boxer as well. He was a man of the people and a man of the world, and definitely he should be a saint.
He should be recognized.
And to name the airport after him would be an extra honor, not alone to me, but I'm sure other people out there.
Okay. Well, we'll see what the listeners think of that one, Edward. Many thanks for that. John, do you know much about Father or Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty?
I don't. I know the name, but I certainly haven't seen in depth of life. And, you know, again, a credible figure, no question.
Yeah, it sounds like he had a very interesting life, for sure. If he was in Rome in the 1920s, that's the time of Mussolini, obviously. Let me bring in Dennis now. Dennis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
What's your thinking on this?
Well, Katie, I was laughing when I heard the discussion kicking off, because just a few weeks ago I was in Eason's, which is the only bookshop on O'Connell Street, the main thoroughfare in our capital city, and they didn't have a single book on Daniel O'Connell.
Really?
You can pick up lots of volumes about the men in 1916, etc., but there wasn't a single thing on Daniel O'Connell in the bookshop. I thought it was very ironic, given that, you know, Eason's is the only bookshop on O'Connell Street.
But do you know, even more so, though, if we are, as we say, we are facing into the 250th anniversary, a very significant anniversary of his birth, and there isn't, if you walk into Eason's, there isn't a single book on him.
Exactly. Well, that was the case, Katie, just a few weeks ago, you know.
Isn't that extraordinary? John.
It is extraordinary.
John,
I'm
just going to say, John, could you rush one out quickly? There could be a killing to be made here.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my God, perfect timing.
I'm telling you, that's extraordinary, isn't it? That they're, you know, to mark a big anniversary, that's when you'd often see a bit of a boom in publications.
I think it's not because there aren't books available. It's just they aren't in circulation, or maybe they're out of print. I know, for example, that Patrick Gagan has a very good book on Daniel O'Connell. I think it's called King Dan.
Mm-hmm. And why were you looking for a book, Dennis? Why were you looking for a book on Daniel O'Connell?
Well, I'm very interested in Frederick Douglass and his experience on visiting Ireland, you know. And Daniel O'Connell was a huge hero to Frederick Douglass because of his support to the abolition of slavery in America. I mean, Daniel O'Connell, one of the things he should be celebrated for is the fact that he refused to visit America or to shake the hand of anyone who made any money from owning slaves or dealing with plantations, etc. And, you know, it made me think that, you know, when you think of poor Micheál Martin having to go over and shake hands with Donald Trump, I'm not sure Daniel O'Connell would have done that.
I'm told, Dennis, that Easons do have a book on Daniel O'Connell for sale online. It's a book by Gay Shortland. So you might want to look that one up. Would you call the airport after him?
Well, of course you'd call. It's an obvious thing to do in an airport in Kerry to call it after the most famous Kerry man of all time. But I would go further. I mean, Dublin Airport could be called after him. I mean, Daniel O'Connell is a national hero, not just, you know, a Kerry man. And, you know, I think we've lost sight of his legacy during the centenary celebrations that have been taking place over the last 10 years or so.
Yes, I suppose
he's the man who laid the foundations for the independence of Ireland, really, through his civil rights advocacy in the 19th century.
I'm told, and it's reported today, that the department with responsibility for state commemorations is preparing for the anniversary of his birth. That's on the 6th of August. This is the Department of Tourism, Culture, Arts, Gaelic, Sports and Media. You have to take a deep breath before you name that department. Their headquarters are actually in Killarney, so I'm sure they're hearing a bit more about it than usual. They say that following the conclusion of the decade of centenaries, the department is now responsible for coordinating an appropriate cross-governmental approach to remember the significant historical events of the early years of the state and other significant events and themes. I've got another text in here. Katie, keeping it real, it has to be the Micheál Mura Hirtík Airport.
That's a wonderful suggestion.
There'd be plenty that would go for that, for sure. Can I bring in Mark? Mark, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, you have another suggestion, Mark.
I have, yeah. I think you should call it the Andrew Minahan Airport. He was a brother of mine and he was the first manager of the airport.
Was he?
Yeah. And during his time as manager, he rented out offices to two brothers who were going to set up a factory in Tralee or Killarney, making hot pants at the time. In the early 70s, 1970-71. And it transpired that the two of them were British spies. But they were also bank robbers. And they were eventually caught and sent into Mountjoy. And then they were exchanged for some other prisoners later on, I think, somewhere along the line. But he was the first manager of the thing, of the airport. And they flew all the Rose of Tralee and all things like that at that time that when he was down there. So obviously it's in fairly stiff competition. That Monsignor O'Flaherty was a brilliant fella and did fantastic work in Rome. I've read about him all right. And obviously Daniel O'Connell would be kind of a hard one to go up against.
And Micheál Mura Hirtík, Mark?
Micheál Mura Hirtík, yeah. I mean the funny thing about Micheál Mura Hirtík is I'd be one of the people who'd only have the cúpla focal. And every time that Micheál Mura Hirtík was on the radio, I could understand every single word that he said. Whereas I listened to the news on Radio na Gaeltacht now, and even the news in Irish on RTE. And I find it very difficult to follow it. But Micheál Mura Hirtík had a lovely voice, and his what his pronunciation must have been the same as the one that I learned. Well, I had a Kerry teacher for a good lot of my time.
I was just going
up.
To say, did you have a Kerry teaching you, a Kerry person teaching you Irish?
Because I did. But me, all number of heretics Irish was lovely.
It was. He's beautiful.
I put it on the line. He'd be ahead of O'Connell alphabetically, I suppose, and he'd be ahead of O'Flaherty alphabetically. So maybe he'd get on well. Mura Hertig, I'm not sure whether Murray Hertig and Minahan would be. They'd be. Well, he's MUIR.
He'd be ahead there as well. I'm trying to catch it. That's the most extraordinary story. Did you say that the factories that they were going to set up were going to be producing hot pants?
Going to be made
hot pants, as in the clothes, yes. As in like short shorts, hot pants.
As in short shorts, yes.
What a brilliant story!
They had an aeroplane down there, and there were a couple of models who'd stand around in these hot pants modelling the things. And my brother used to have to stand there as the pilot of the plane and the manager of the hotel, of the airport, saying that this was going to be a big breakthrough and stuff. Now, these two fellas were bank robbers as well as being British spies. And when they paid the rent in the airport, and they had to pay their rent every month. Mm-hmm. They used to pay it out in cash out of a biscuit tin. So he was saying for a long time there's something funny about those. They're not really that kosher, but they weren't caught for ages, and eventually they were caught. And a bank in Grafton Street. They robbed a bank in Grafton Street.
This is back in the 70s, is it?
About 70, 71, I'd say.
That is, I feel there's a very, there's another book in that, obviously. Has there been a book written about it?
I don't know if it's written about the Little Johns. They were very famous at the time. I mean, they were even more famous than Malcolm MacArthur at that time, as far as I remember.
Right. Oh, God, I've got one now.
But then again,
I've got one here that might beat Hugh Flaherty and Micheál Ó Maith-Chertaigh and Andrew, I'm afraid. Peg Sayers Airport, Mark.
Okay, thanks. Good luck.
That's Mark. He didn't love his Irish teacher that much. That's what Peg Sayers got us. Ruth, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Who do you think we should be naming the airport after?
Oh, it has to be Daniel O'Connell. No, I was also thinking, though, about the gender side of it there, just because of them all being men. And I thought, first of all, I'll digress. Daniel O'Connell, because he was the most significant man that ever came out of Kerry, in the sense of he saw the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And I often think of him, you know, leaving in that carriage from Derrynane, going on that tremendous long journey all the way to the House of Commons in London, and then finally getting the Emancipation Act through under Arthur Wellesley, the Duke of Wellington, of course, born in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And, of course, a common misconception about that famous phrase is just because you're born in a stable doesn't make you a horse. That Wellesley said it. It wasn't. It was actually Daniel O'Connell. So Daniel O'Connell was really, in a lot of ways, the first European. And I think he's been sidelined because he didn't go the violent route. He saw what he was in France studying during the French Revolution. And when he saw what was going on, he was so taken aback by it. He was horrified. It imprinted in his brain. And then he never went that way. And he famously cancelled the mass rally in Clontarf because of the fear of violence. But what he achieved for this country is amazing. Now, what I would do if I had the opportunity would have a history of the O'Connell family inside in the airport after the naming so people would know why. You know, those who had time to stop and look at it, obviously coming and going. But what you could put in there is his wonderful auntie, Eileen Dosney Connell, who after, yes, she was his aunt, and she wrote one of the most famous laments, Lament for Arthur O'Leary, and that should go into the history of the family.
So that could be
she
playing, that could be playing on a loop and in
Ah,
Farnborough.
Now, Katie. Come on, don't need to be facetious. Dearin Ní Gcriafha brought it to life there in the last couple of years with a fantastic memoir where she actually paralleled her own life with Eileen Dosney Connell. And I normally don't like those kind of books, but she pulled it off brilliantly about what this woman went through, you know, when he was killed famously on the horse for daring to ride a horse, which he had from fighting in Europe. You had a beautiful horse and you were Catholic and you weren't meant to be riding nice horses, and he was killed for his horse. So, you know, it's not about wallowing in the past. It's just showing really that wouldn't it have been great if the airport was there, would have made his journey from Derrynan much, much easier. But the point was he did it, and he did it, and we've all gained from what he achieved, you know. And that's it.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, because of course Derrynan, one of the most beautiful places on earth.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you get the sense of his uncle, who was the smuggler hunting cap down there, up to nefarious stuff, bringing in the whiskey and all the rest under the radar, you know, so it wasn't all, you know, perfect. But the point was that connection got him the education, because he was born in dire poverty in Garsavine. The family wouldn't have been able to educate him, only this uncle who provided the funds to give him the head start. And the way he defended the poor and, you know, was all in the circuit courts all over Ireland. And, you know, his life story is simply still astonishing 250 years later, you know.
Again, because it had struck me before that it's amazing that there isn't more statues of Daniel O'Connell or more buildings dedicated to him. But that there hasn't been a movie of his life, because even as a child, I remember thinking of him as this sort of very glamorous figure.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, I don't know. Is it just because it's so long ago? But I mean, you're right. I mean, when you think of him in France and being terrified, he actually wore the cockatoo hat in case they'd have a go at him. But the point was, it led him on the path of nonviolence, you know. I don't know. Maybe it's because he was a politician. I don't know. I really don't. And, you know, but he, you know, between him doing the duel and the other man being killed and him wearing the black glove for the rest of his life.
Oh, yeah, tell that story. Tell the duel story, because that was
I'm a bit vague on it now, but I know that he didn't want to do it and the man was killed. And the man, he carried a black glove in commemoration of that man for the rest of his life. But I've forgotten what the duel was about. Somebody else ringing in might be a historian.
John Crotty, did you hear that story of the duel? I kind of half heard it myself before.
Yeah, certainly. You know, it was just a disagreement between the pair and over nothing, over words, not even a physical altercation that led to this. So what a tragedy. They actually had the duel on occasion and decided to call it off. But the cost of the rhetoric that came out of that, when they hit with it eventually, and tragically the man was killed. Daniel intentionally shot low and hit him low in his body, and hoped and believed that he wasn't going to pass away from this, but he died a number of days later. So it left a mark, and it left a dark mark for a man who was so against violence his whole life.
Yeah, that was it. That was the story. And going back to you, Ruth, you think that Hugh Flaherty would have to be disqualified?
Well, I mean, I do it with a heavy heart now, because in a way, you know, he was equally astonishing what he did, and I suppose more modern and near time. But he has one exclusion clause. He was born in Cork.
Well, that's him gone, so...
I do it with the tongue firmly in my cheek because you know, he grew up in Killarney. His father, I think, was the golf pro there. And he was fantastic, as honoured by with Gregory Peck playing him in the film. And, of course, Ghosts of Rome and the first one with Joseph O'Connor going through that period of what they did in the Vatican.
That's it. What's In My Father's House, isn't it?
Oh, sorry, yes, I got a momentary blank on the first one. I haven't read The Ghosts of Rome. I don't think he features as much in the second one. But the point was, he was an incredibly brave and courageous man. But O'Connell, I think, in terms of the effect it had on us for Irish history, in terms of what he did for us, I think by the fact that he did it by rhetoric and oratory and by, you know, as I say, John Hume is the figure, I think, in modern day that I would see as it being an O'Connell type figure who just kept repeating the same message and he finally got the result he wanted. And
Ruth, will you hang on for me? And John, hang on. I want to take a break, but I have a couple of more suggestions coming in, and I want
talk
to
Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we are talking about proposals to name Kerry Airport after Daniel O'Connell. Mary, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Katie. How are you doing?
I'm good. I was looking for some. I was hoping somebody would come up with a woman, and you have come up with the woman we mentioned already.
Yes, definitely. Peg Sayers. I know when you say it to people, they say Peg Sayers, they all think back of the, you know, the learning the Irish and being at school and so on and all those things. And like Peg, like it wasn't her fault, she had a miserable life. But Peg, when she was four, she went to school and she started learning poetry and reading and so on. And she learned a lot of her storytelling from her parents and her grandparents. And then at 14, like many people at the time, Peg had to leave school because, financial difficulties in the family. And she always wanted to go to America. Her friend, Coach Jim, immigrated to America, and she said she'd sent home the passage, which was at the time. You went away, you immigrated. It was like the Irish wake. You never returned home, but you always sent home money to a family member or a friend. So Peg was always set on going to America. But sadly for Peg, she never got to go on an aeroplane. She never got to fly because Coach became ill and Peg couldn't go to America like she wanted to. So she was absolutely heartbroken. Now, then when she was 21, she married and she moved out to Dunquin, out on the Dingle Peninsula there, and she had a very happy marriage. Together, they had 11 children, them survived.
Mary, I was going to say, a very happy marriage that generated a very sad book. a book full of O'Hone.
Absolutely. It was, and it was about her children. The story was life in Dunquin and what life was like and how sad it was. And all of her children immigrated, I think, except two. But what made me think more about Peg Sayers, it was this Irish Folklore Commission many years ago. And they recorded Peg, it was a BBC, was on the BBC. And it showed Peg, and she was up in like an old folks' home, they used to call it at the time, and she had the little bed jacket on her, and she had the little knitted hat on her. And she started telling the story. It was translated, her story, to English. And she was talking about her son who died gathering kippens and fell over the cliffs and all her children going. So she told the story and of her life and what she did at the end, which I thought was quite remarkable. When she'd be thinking of the sad things, she'd clap her hands to stop her thinking of sad things. And she said, you can escape from many things except the thoughts in your head, which is so, so true. All those things that she had. So it wasn't Peg's fault she had a miserable life.
No, it wasn't. No, although I think generations of school children will not forgive her for it. But actually, if you go back and read that book now, or you read the translation of it, it's an extraordinary book, actually. And to think that it was written, like, it comes completely from the oral tradition. And it's an incredible insight into that world that was just about to disappear.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you can get the book in English now and read it in Irish, but as I say, it's a great way if you're into a pub and you're waiting at the bar and you ask somebody to do. Do they read Peg Sayers? They'll move away. So it's very easy to get through. But I think, like all of the other ones you mentioned now, like Daniel O'Connell, there is the church there in Carras Éireann is named after him. He's the only lay person, the only church in Ireland that's named after a lay person. And there's lots of streets named after him. Then you have the other ones that they mentioned there, Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty, a wonderful man as well. There's lovely, you know, monuments there in Killarney representing him and all the awards that he won. And Thomas Crean, another very good one. But I think Peg Sayers, I think, would be a nice one. But as I say, if people could even get, you know, that from the Irish Folklore Commission, just to have a look at Peg and her storytelling and the person that she was, and with all the sadness, how she just clap her hand and snap herself out of it. So I think, you know, that's just be my opinion.
I love it. Yeah, that's a great one, Mary. I really do think. And as you say, like there's places you can go, you know, and all of those other men, good men, great men have been honoured in their way. But there is nowhere you can go to pay tribute to Peg unless you go to a grave.
Yeah, well, that's it. And not many people get to go to see the Peg Sayers. But of all the counties in Ireland, Kerry is the one place that has so many amazing people. As I say, Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty, he rescued, I think, 6,500 Jews and Allied soldiers during World War II. So all very worthy, but they have monuments. But I don't see anything anywhere about Peg Sayers.
Yeah, great suggestion, Mary. Love it. Okay, let me see as we who else have we got here? Will I go bring in Padraig? Padraig?
Yes, sir, Kitty. How are you doing?
I'm good. What's your suggestion for the airport?
Well, I thought one of the suggestions that was made there was a very good one for Daniel O'Connell, but I still think it should be a joint tribute to another O'Connell, Mick O'Connell, the great GAA player from Fillinshead. And that would, he was one of the greatest footballers that ever put on a boot. And the game is still, the game that he played, it's high-fielding game in Paid Centre Field, and it's a game that it's a type of game, even to this day, that the GAA are reverting back to the type of play that was. Plus the fact that he was one of the most famous players of his day. He travelled from Village Island to go to games all over the country, and it would be fitting, as the heritage that Kerry has in GAA, that there would be part ownership of any name on the airport put to a GAA man. And that's not taken away, but also it's a good name selection for Daniel O'Connell, because he was a pacifist politician. He didn't believe in violence to achieve Irish unity. He tried his best to Catholic emancipation, everything, to see Irish nationalism brought to the fore. And I still think that would, but I would say, name it O'Connell Airport and you have a great... You have 2 million that is put it as a tribute to both of those characters.
Padraig, great suggestion. Thank you for that. I want to bring in Maurice O'Connell now. And Maurice, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on. O'Connell Airport's a great idea. I don't know whether it'll give me a discount in the car park there. I must have a word with management next time I'm around.
What's your connection with that surname?
So I'm Daniel O'Connell's great-great-great-grand-nephew, and I make a whiskey called the Liberator, which I sell around the world and allows me to tell the story of Daniel O'Connell and his significance internationally, which is why I think that calling the airport after him is a great idea, because he just has such international significance. I mean, in the US, they know Frederick Douglass, who was who used to be a slave, and while he was a slave, he used to hear his masters cursing Daniel O'Connell for his anti-slavery campaigning, and eventually came to Dublin 180 years ago this year, actually, to meet Daniel O'Connell. And they were so impressed, Dan and Frederick Douglass were so impressed by each other. Frederick Douglass used to call himself the Black O'Connell after that. I was in Mumbai selling whiskey before Christmas, and I was able to relate the story there that Gandhi acknowledged Daniel O'Connell's process of achieving revolutionary change through peaceful means. Gandhi recognized that as his inspiration in his autobiography, as did Martin Luther King. We launched in Belgium recently, and I was able to tell them there the story that when Belgium got its independence from the Netherlands in, I think, 1830, such was Daniel O'Connell's fame internationally at the time, that they decided they wanted to have a constitutional monarchy and they wanted to vote for their king. And members of the Belgian cabinet came to Derry Naan to ask Daniel O'Connell if he'd allow his name to be put forward to be voted for as King of Belgium. That just shows you what respect he was held in his time. And we've forgotten a lot of what he's done now. Just in Ireland, Glasnevin Cemetery, he was one of the founders of that, because Catholics weren't allowed to be buried in the centre of Dublin. So he and some friends bought some land at Glasnevin, which is now the National Cemetery, and that was open to everyone, and you just had to be dead. That was the only condition. he was one of the founder directors of what became the Bank of Ireland. He started clubs like the Stephen's Green Club in Dublin, the Reform Club in London. He just had his hand in so many things. And although our main street in Dublin is named after him, I don't think it would hurt to have an airport in Kerry named after him as well.
I'm saying what I was saying to you. It's incredible there isn't a movie, a film of his life, because he's such an extraordinary international figure, really, and such a glamorous figure.
Huge, and just loads of things happening. And Queen Victoria, in her autobiography, in her diaries, would she doesn't do an autobiography. She, prior to meeting Daniel O'Connell, she was full of excitement of meeting this fantastic orator and charismatic leader. He had a huge effect on people. Not only in his own county. And it's appropriate that an airport would be named for him, because during his time, or before his time, Catholics were subject to the penal laws, which subjugated Catholics. And to a large extent, Catholics were disenfranchised in their own land. We weren't, and we had to go abroad to make our fortunes. And Dan was part of a family which traded internationally, sometimes not quite so legally, it has to be said. The family would owe more, would be more connected with the capitals of Europe than with our own capital in Ireland, which was run by the Protestant ascendancy for the Protestant ascendancy. So, as a nation, we have to be outward facing, outward looking, and what better than having an airport reflecting that?
Yeah, indeed, Maurice. Will you hang on for me? I need to take a break, yeah. But I want to stick with this for a little while longer.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're talking about proposals for renaming of Kerry Airport. A strong case being made for Daniel O'Connell, the Daniel O'Connell Airport. Connor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. Thanks for having me.
What's your suggestion?
Now, I'm calling in as a Cork man, so it's a little bit different, but it comes off the back of the Peg Sayers card, and we are a land not of misery, but of the crack. Okay?
Okay.
And so I was thinking, let's have a great revival of Kerry Airport and name it Fungi Airport. Okay? But bear with me. With me. I know what you're thinking, Kitty. You could have the branding for the airport as a plane leaping out of the Atlantic Ocean, so leap out of Fungi Airport. Or you could, now, there no flights would be allowed over the Fungi Triangle.
Right.
As Fungi has gone missing. However, you could also market it at direct flights between the Bermuda Airport and the Fungi Airport. And then, hypothetically, and now this is all branding, it'd be very clever. If your probably Ryanair flight got delayed, it would be water off a dolphin's back.
Okay, Connor. do you write Christmas cracker jokes for for a sideline.
I googled my joke. I just thought it would be a clever idea. There's good branding in there. It's a bit of fun. It's a bit of crack. But I've probably lost out to Daniel O'Connell Airport, I imagine.
I think you might have. But thanks for that, Connor.
No, I
appreciate
problem.
That. Ray, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. What do you think about Fungi Airport?
It's a bit of a take. Although Fungi did swim around the Blasket Islands, so he probably would support my contention that Peg Sayers is a great idea.
Ah, another vote for Peg.
Absolutely. Peg Sayers is one of the best storytellers in Ireland, and one of the best preserved storytellers in Ireland. And storytelling at that time was the only thing that took people out of their penury and their difficult existence. She was actually a very humorous and funny woman. It was just she was profiled, I suppose, in a different light in the book. In a book, I hasten to add, that should never have been introduced to the education system for 15, 16 and 17-year-olds that would just slaughter her image, because it's now studied right across the world by folklorists, by people who look at heritage and see it as a gem, as an absolutely excellent, excellent book.
I do think, yeah, I think that the Irish education system did poor Peg a fierce disservice there.
Yeah, and Daniel O'Connell wasn't great either in terms of the Irish system, because even though he did impress upon the rights of people and to seek their rights and to take them out of poverty and misery, he also did actively say, keep your children away from Irish. He saw it as something that stopped and stunted people from getting employment and getting a better living, instead of maybe encouraging bilingualism.
Oh, so can we blame Daniel O'Donnell for the destruction of the Irish language?
Not Daniel O'Donnell.
Daniel O'Connell.
Daniel O'Connell, probably at the beginning, yeah.
We still have Morris. He's great, great, great grandnephew. Have I got that right, Morris?
That's right. Yeah.
Do you want to defend the honour of Daniel O'Connell and the damage he did to the Irish language?
What he said was that he'd better deal with the devil on their own terms, and that involved the English language. And whether that's right or wrong, people have different views. I don't think it affects his international reputation. I'd still like to see the airport called Daniel O'Connell Airport. It's the friendliest airport I've ever been through. It would be a fitting tribute, I think.
Yeah, mind you, can I ask you, Morris, in all truth, because you probably use that airport quite a bit, do you ever refer to it as Kerry Airport, or do you, like the rest of us generally call it, Farn Four?
No, I like to call it Kerry International Airport, just to impress upon people that there are flights to like quite a few places.
Well said. It's a fantastic service if anyone has been through it.
The airport you could ever hope to find. And in the end, the whatever you call it, I mean, look at George Best Airport in Belfast. That's called Belfast Airport. Yeah. They just honoured George Best by calling him that. I think we'd all still call it Farn Four or Kerry. I'd like to see Daniel O'Connell on there, but that's just my perspective.
And obviously you would, but as I say, you're definitely not alone. A huge amount of support for that idea today. Anyway, Tom, good afternoon.
How are you? Morris's point was a really good one, I think, about an outward-looking team. But it seems to me that Daniel O'Connell has got the street in the capital and the bridge in the capital already, whereas there's somebody who was, for many, many decades, greatly ignored, Tom Crean. And the point is not that he did three expeditions to the Antarctic, but there are two points about him. He sailed in what's regarded by most historians as one of the greatest ever small boat journeys, 800 or 900 miles from Elephant Island to South Georgia to secure rescue on a 22.5-foot boat. And also, he did a journey of about 35 miles across the Ross Shelf in the Antarctic to save Evans on his own. So, I mean, the outstanding heroism of that is absolutely, you know, world class. And I remember the time when Dick Spring was Minister for Foreign Affairs, there was an EU meeting in Ireland, and the Farn Four was lined with jets from foreign ministers from all over the EU. Now, if we could arrange some such meeting, the next, our presidency comes on, is it next year it's coming on, or I think, of the EU, that you know, it would be an ideal time to actually launch the naming of the airport. And again, I mean, the location already is midway between North and South Kerry, which is nice to all Kerry people. But I think that the international impact of recognising the heroism and achievements of Tom Crean, and he's also an extremely modest guy. We never spoke about it when he came back. He retired at 43 and he was dead at 61. And within a short time of his coming back home, he had a tragedy of his older brother, who was an RIC sergeant in West Cork, was shot dead during the troubles of that era. And whether that made him reluctant to talk about anything, I don't know. But he was really an absolutely outstanding guy and an inspiration. And I think that there's very little reason to be doubtful and every reason to be totally optimistic about the reception that choosing him would get.
Yeah. Tom, excellent suggestion. You're not the first one to come up with that. And I think, yeah, a serious contender along with Daniel O'Connell, in fairness. Tom Crean, the great explorer, of course, from Honest Call. Mary O'Sullivan. Good afternoon, Mary.
Hello.
Yes,
hello.
Mary. You have another suggestion, Mary.
Well, I have great respect for Daniel O'Connell, and I've heard that there's somebody found a bridge named after him in New Zealand. So, but I was thinking about another person. He was a Canon Brosnan, and he was from Castle Island. And he was parish priest of Carterveen, and he built schools, and he built the convent. He went to London to get the rail line to Carterveen, and it's now going to be the Greenway. And he went to Rome to get permission to build the church to Daniel O'Connell. He even got crews together to fix roads around Carterveen. And he looked after the poor there in the Ivra area. So he's largely forgotten, but he was a great man. And I don't think they had any politicians down there at that time. They all turned to him.
He sounds like a bit of a Monsignor Horan of his time.
Yes, he was a great man, I think. Yeah.
Canon.
He was a Canon Dennis Brosnan, and he was from Castle Island originally.
And nothing to the modern Dennis Brosnan, who was the man behind Kerry Group.
I don't know that because I haven't gone into the birth stuff or anything like that.
But I'll tell you, there's plenty of millionaires around Kerry now after the Kerry Co-op deal that was done there that might want the airport named after Dennis Brosnan now that I think about it.
You could name an awful lot of people.
Indeed.
But this Canon seemed to be everybody talking to him because there didn't seem to be anybody else.
He sounds an amazing man altogether. I'd love to know more about him, Mary. We'll have to look into that. Anyone else has any other information about Canon Brosnan, formerly of Castle Island?
Castle Island,
but a parish priest of Carterveen.
He was a parish priest of Carterveen, yes.
Okay.
And he got so much work done, and he got the church built, and it was just built, I think, 2 years. He died 2 years before it was opened, which was sad, like, but...
And that's the only church in the country that's
in the world, I think, in the world
that's named for a civilian or for a non saint.
Yes.
Okay, Mary, thanks for that. Another great
Thank
suggestion.
You.
We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, we're going to leave that for a moment at least, because I wanted to get to this story that we spotted in the Examiner today. This is that people in the EU are being advised to stockpile enough food, water and essentials for 72 hours. This is part of a European strategy that aims to increase readiness for catastrophic floods and fires, pandemics and military attacks. And this is coming from the Commissioner for Preparedness and Crisis Management, I think it is. Frank, good afternoon.
Hey, Katie, how are you doing? Nice to be back with you.
Frank, you're a prepper.
I am a prepper.
Would you explain?
I look out for all kinds of things that go wrong in the world.
Yeah, explain to people, because actually I was reading about this elsewhere very recently. There's quite a big community now of preppers out there.
There will be, yeah, and there's no harm in being prepared for something like this. Basically, what's happening here in around Europe is that the likes of Scandinavian countries are wise to what's going on around the world, and they're advising their citizens to just get ready just in case of some kind of emergency, catastrophe. So they're not going to scare the bejesus out of everybody, but they're subtly trying to bring you to your way of thinking to be prepared. Have some extra food in the house for everybody. Have some extra water. Have some form of shelter if you lose your house, if it burns down or blows away in a tornado or a nuclear bomb or something. Heat sources and light sources. That's what they're telling people to do. Just be wary. Be prepared. Like the old scout motto back in the day, be prepared.
Be prepared. The well, I mean, obviously we all know what happened when we, you know, got a glimpse of the apocalypse at the start of the pandemic in 2020, and there were nearly killings in the toilet roll aisles of all the supermarkets.
That's right. I remember I went in to get four tins of kidney beans and they would only give me two. And I was out camping, that weekend, I was cooking for the lads, and they'd only give me two cans instead of four. So, I mean, that was strange.
And that's only 4 years ago. Like, that's a very recent development for people, or a memory for people. So tell me, like, what, like, I see here, as I say, the EU commissioner with responsibility for preparedness and crisis management, she is obviously trying to encourage this. And she talks about an emergency bag and she puts one together in the video. And I'm just going to say, she has in her emergency bag ID documents in waterproof casing, cans of food, bottled water, matches, a Swiss Army knife, cash, playing cards, medicines and a small radio.
That would work for a 72-hour kit, and then you could just add away to it as you want. If you think, I might need this, might need that. Medication is one thing that a lot of people wouldn't think of. Just say your house is burning down and you need to run in and grab something. This is what it's designed to do. Grab that bag, get out. So now you have your documents, which are copied onto USB or maybe photocopied, whatever. You have a copy of them, and you have your medication in there for a week or so, and then you just have water, food that you can drink and share around. Just say you're out in the middle of the sticks, your house burns down, and there's a 10 foot of snow, so you're stuck. You know, this, you just have to try and imagine a few different scenarios. But basically, it's just to give you a bit of confidence that, if something does go wrong, I can grab the bag, and I know my mortgage details are in that, and my pension, and my, you know, any documents, marriage certs, and all that kind of stuff. They're all put onto a USB. Very simple to do, and you can have 10 of them thrown around the place. The likes of the food, canned food, you don't have to go tins of beans all day long. Then you need the toilet paper. But if you have the canned food, you can get stew that'll last you, tins of stew that'll last you 4 or 5 years, or you can get the Frey Bentis, like they last about 5 or 6 years. And water, shelter. I mean, shelter is a simple one. It's the likes of a tarp thrown in the bottom of the bag. It'll keep you dry if it's lashing rain as well. But that's what they're trying to do. They're just trying to say, if a war starts out or some massive catastrophe, they don't want to scare everybody, as I said, let's say nuclear war comes our direction. We're never going to get hit with a nuclear weapon. That's not going to happen, ever. We will get the residual effects of it, though, if it does hit Europe. Because radiation doesn't know boundaries, doesn't know borders. So that's what they're worried about. And I think, you know, in our lifetime, are we going to see something like this? I'd hope not, but you never know.
So if I were to drop into you now, Frank, what would I find in your cupboard? What do you have? Because you're smug in this front.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm with the lads, and we're only talking about this the last couple of days. These emergency leaflets that are being sent out, Sweden started that up there a good few years ago, and prior to the Cold War finishing, they had their bunkers and everything like that. And next thing, Cold War was over, they said, we don't need the bunkers anymore. Guess what? Now they're refurbishing the bunkers, and so is Finland. They've reissued in case, their one is called In Case of War, and it's in English and Swedish. The German one is very similar. And we had one in 1965. I can't think of the word. It's an Irish one, but it's in English. The name of it is Irish, in 1965, and it was all to do with radiation as well. I was only looking at that the other night. You were asking me about what's in mine. Mm-hmm. I've only about 3 months' worth of food. There's only two or three of us in the house at any one time. Food, I have loads of water, I have loads of electricity, I have loads of solar and generators. I have backup communications then. If something goes wrong, I can chat to a few of the lads a few counties over. I have the local radios. You know, I have radios and batteries. I think most people have just got rid of them now, and they're relying on Alexa and Googles to listen to the radio or in the car.
That's a good point, actually, because, you know, 10 years ago, everyone had a radio. But now a lot of people just listen to the radio on their app.
Well, this all came to a head now in Galway, or in the northwest, in our last storm, Owen, is it?
Sure. I was going to say, people don't need to be worrying about the apocalypse at all because they know they live through.
People went in to try doing shopping in the shop and the cards weren't working. So you need cash. So you should have a bit of cash as well in your grab bag. Don't have to have thousands, just a few quid just to get you the essentials in the shop if they are still open.
Yeah.
But candles,
Frank. I remember talking to people on this programme and they couldn't find candles for love nor money.
Candles are brilliant. They're the easiest thing to buy, the cheapest thing to buy. They'll heat the house. They'll heat a room if you just close the door to sit in a room and you have five or six candles going. That'll heat that room in an hour or so, you know. No problem. You know, it's blankets, sleeping bags, tea lights. They all give off a nice bit of heat. Camping stoves. If you have an old camping stove, drag it out and see if that's still working. You know, that kind of stuff. Most people have these in the houses. It's just a matter of putting them into one location, to one bag, and saying, right, that's my safety bag over there now, just in case something happens.
Frank, will you hang on, Frank? We have Elizabeth on the other line. Elizabeth, good afternoon to you.
Sure. Hello, Katie.
Yeah, you're on top of this as well?
When I lived in New Zealand some years ago, going back 25 years ago, actually, it was the norm for us to have, not to be kept in your house. You had to keep it outside of your home. In New Zealand, I guess, a lot of the things were either heavy floods or heavy rainfall or small earthquakes or varying degrees of earthquakes, both of which we would have experienced in my time down there. So just as Frank said, we'd have a box with batteries, candles, cash, medication, baby wipes, warm coat, stuff like that, tinned food, lots of water. And that was just the norm. It was normal advice we all took and most people would take in heed of it.
And I was just going to say, would that be everyone? That wouldn't be just the kind of careful people. That would be most people would have one of these.
It wasn't considered alarmist. It was a common sense approach. It was just general advice given. And a lot of people I knew, we all did that. We kept it maybe out in our garages or in another building away from the house. I've experienced, you could be lying in bed at night and when an earthquake comes, when it starts to come, you don't know how big it's going to be, how long it's going to last. So your house could literally be dislodged. I mean, one day we got up to go to work, went out of our gate, round the corner, there was no road left. The road had caved in, bridges caved in. That's all the time in New Zealand. We have in rural provincial places with heavy rainfall, of slides and bridges fall. And you've no way out until the rescue agencies come and help to get you out, or you have to go cross country on foot. And it doesn't happen all the time, but it happened quite a few times in my 14 years there.
So when you moved back, Elizabeth, did you keep up that habit then? I mean, would you have a grab bag outside the door of your house now?
Well, actually, not consciously the way I would have done it in New Zealand. But for example, I have a guest house here in Monaghan, and we had people staying. It was a very busy weekend. The score of national finals were in Monaghan the weekend of the big storm, Yeohan. And lucky enough, I was luckier than most people because I've always said I have to have gas. I'm lucky I've got two stoves, firewood stoves, and I'd loads of candles. I always keep candles and matches somewhere handy. But just listening to this article from the Examiner this morning, it's reminded me, you know, that yes, it wouldn't be a bad idea to do. But I do keep batteries and backup stuff. I have it if I needed it. But maybe more so we're going to need for, you know, people with floods on the coast and stuff like that and the winds that we did have here.
I wonder, is it... there's a certain mentality. I mean, obviously, as you say, this is just kind of common sense. And I think, Frank, you might come in on this as well. Like, it's common sense what you describe there. But there is a whole community out there. It's a very strong among the MAGA community in particular in the States of, you know, preparing for the dystopian future that's just around the corner.
That's one half of what's going on out there. Of course, they've got the hurricanes and they've got the tornadoes. I mean, you can't blame them for tornadoes. And then the wildfires in LA there earlier this year, houses just gone. What do you have? Absolutely nothing left. So, you mean, you're hearing terrible stories. I mean, in them situations, I mean, your grab bag will do it for 2 days, 3 days, but after that, you're really screwed. So some of people have gone really all out, cabins in the woods with all their gear, bunkers. I wouldn't mind a bunker myself. I have one hidden away, but I can't tell you where it is.
What, you have a hang on, Frank. You have a secret bunker, do you?
Yes, we do. We have a secret spot, and I can't tell anybody because I was tortured the last time. I couldn't give the information away, so they're always at me. Anyway, it's not something we go out and build or something. It's a place of safety. We know it's going to be safe if there's radiation to come in.
So you have a place that radiation can't get into that you're going to keep just for yourself?
Correct. Because you just can't have everybody coming in taking all your food and water and stuff.
Well, my next question then is, what use is it living in a dystopian future if everybody else is gone?
Yeah, that's true. I could stand sitting on the seat on my own watching nothing on the telly. Like, you know. But, no, it's a bit of a hobby. What we do as well is a great hobby because between all of us that do prepping in the country, we do meet up regularly. I mean, we sit around the fire for a couple of nights using our equipment and testing them out. It's no use buying all the gear and saying you can do everything. You've got to be able to go out and actually do stuff.
What kind of gear? Well, like what's the bit of kit now that you really love?
Oh, one of my favourite pieces is a solar-powered battery bank. It's a big yoke. You plug in a hairdryer to it if you wanted, or 1,200 watts into it. You can plug in solar powers or solar panels as well. So you're really completely efficient. You can just walk away with this thing. I have water filters as well. So any water source, you could clean the water and effectively drink away on it. And we're always finding new methods. People are surprising us coming up with, oh, I've done this, and they put up videos of this, that, and the other, and we try them out. Cooking in the ground is another one. The last one I did didn't turn out so great because we tried a whole deer, but sure, we didn't have a fire hot enough, but that was our fault anyway.
You tried to cook a whole deer in the ground?
A whole deer, yeah, and the worst thing about that was it was on TV. So, yeah, we made a ball of that one. Anyway, yeah, well, the camera, like, I have to put my hands up and say, look, the cameras were looking for a picture of it, and it was getting dark. We said, look, it's only in 2 hours, no way it's going to be done. So we got caught with that one.
Okay.
But anyway, the rest of us, everything we do, equipment-wise, we test out. Like a flint, a fire steel to light a fire, or a bow drill is really old-school stuff, like really primitive bushcraft kind of stuff as well. So you go from survivalist to prepper to bushcraft. And we learn all these skills, and I enjoy doing them. I bring some of the kids. There's lots of kids coming out with their families, and we have great weekends. The social aspect of all of this is great.
And you talk about the end of the world.
Not necessarily. No, we don't go too deep in it, you know. But if it does happen, I know people are listening to this and they're saying, "Well, if it does happen, I'm going to go on the blast." No, you're not. Surprise, surprise. You're not. We're not going to get a blast here in Ireland. Maybe in the north, but not down south. We're going to be radiated with radiation dust, for 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh no! When you say we, Frank, you don't mean we, because you're going to be grand in your secret bunker that you're not giving us any invitation or map to.
As my friend says to me, our two legs will be sticking out from under the bed. We'll be grand. That'll be the bunker.
Frank, I've got to take my last break. Great talking to you, and good luck in that bunker.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're still getting loads of calls in about Irish words that have kind of come into the English language. This is after the Oxford Dictionary included 8 new words this week. Pat, good afternoon. We only have a minute left, Pat. Give us a few good words there.
Nice to talk to you. I was found out that the word crabbit, which means bad-tempered, I was seeing that was used in Kerry as cute. They say a baby was crabbit. The
yes,
baby was, the we baby
yeah,
was cute.
That's exactly how we would. Yeah, we'd say, "Oh, real crabbit." Yeah, she was real crabbit. Yeah. Yeah.
And another one was droll, where droll means kind of witty, but in Kerry they use droll as serious.
That's true
in
as well.
In South Kerry.
That is true as well. Yeah, he was a bit droll.
Another one was a fork. A two-pronged fork was a pike for making hay. And then a four-pronged fork was called a dung fork. And in, I found that in the Midlands, it was called a grape, G-R-A-I-P-E. And in the Southeast, it was called the sprong, S-P-R-O-N-G, which were all different words for the same tool.
Yeah, just because you used to travel around the country, Pat, in your job, yeah?
I did, yeah, and I would have come across different meanings of different sayings, and I would have seen galluses for braces.
Yes.
So I would have come across that in Roscommon and in Kerry.
Yeah,
and I would have go ahead.
I was saying a horsefly.
The horsefly was in up in the Midlands, Roscommon, Leitrim, Longford. It was called a cleg, C-L-E-G. And in Munster in southeast it was called the horse doctor.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Pat, I'm actually over time. I'd love to have more time to chat to you, but we're actually out of time for today. Lovely to hear from you though, and all of those, I remember all those Kerry words indeed. And that's it. On sound today, we had Mark McGrath. Our broadcast coordinator was Shane Galvin. On research was Richie Byrne. And our producer today was Tara Lockery-Grant. Stand by now for Ray.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Refresh your home this spring with new curtains. Explore our stylish collection now at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.